Welcome to our remote edition of the podcast, First Name Basis. I'm Sheetal Jaitley, CEO of Tribal Scale. This is our podcast where we chat with special guests, industry leaders, Tribal Scale employees to have an authentic but informal conversation. So I'm really happy today. I actually quoted you in my last podcast as one of my ride or dies.
Nice.
And I've had an amazing experience of being able to work with our guests today for a half hour for quite a bit of time now. It almost feels like it's almost a decade. But you've not only been a mentor, we've been colleagues, you've been an investor, you've been a client. I don't know how many more titles I could throw to you, but most of all, you've been a good friend. And so I wanted to introduce you and say welcome to the podcast. So welcome, Farhan.
Thank you. And I think it's feelings mutual. I was talking to somebody recently about something that you had done at South by Southwest, and they were like, seriously? And I go, yeah, there are some things in the world only Sheetal Jaitley can do.
are we going to talk about the story right now?
Yeah, I can tell you. I can tell the story.
I don't know which one it is, but it's on South by, which involves a lot of eating and drinking. So
no, true. I can tell the story. Actually, what it was when I had, obviously, I lived in Austin. Mm-hmm. And when South by Southwest was first started, it was a little tiny community. It was only music, and it was not something that all the tech community would go to. And as it grew over time, it became this giant event. Like Twitter was launched there. Remember those apps, Bluetooth,
Foursquare.
Yeah. So it was a giant event. And when you had mentioned that we should have a industry event hosted by Extreme Labs at South by, I laughed. I'm like, how are you going to get people to come to your event? It's South by Southwest. It's the biggest conference in the world at the time. There's no way you'll get anybody to this dinner. And I think I was talking to Sunny, and Sunny's like, well, look, let's see what happens. And you had like 100 people at the dinner. And I go, and there were not only just 100 random people, 100 industry leaders in their different areas, from media to sports to entertainment. And that's when I said, there are some things in this world only Sheetal can do, right? And
well, you know how the dinner started. You, myself, Robert Occhialini.
Yep.
We were all caught in the rain, and we ran into Fogo de Chao.
That's right.
And we had an amazing dinner, and it was probably like 8 of us. And we're like, hey, we should make this a yearly thing. And so the next year, we tried to formalize it more, and I think it was like 32. And now it gets over like 150 people, and we have to curate and just demand to come in. And it's awesome. But
it's a good example of if you didn't try it, I would have said, no way is this going to work, so let's just not do it. And instead, yeah, we're like, oh, let's try it. I think probably Sunny's like, let's just try it, and it ended up being a real deal.
Sunny, for those of you who don't know, Sunny was one of the co-founders of Extreme Labs. But yeah, that dinner has manifested itself into something amazing, very similar to like the Ocean's 11 dinner that Nahal started in Barcelona.
Same idea, which is
the same idea. Learn from him and try to do it our way. So Farhan,
yes.
For those of you who don't know you, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Sure. So I've spent a lot of time in technology, worked at big companies and small, like started my own company with Daniel DeBoe called Helpful, and big, like Microsoft. So definitely have seen the ebbs and flows of being in the small company and large. I do a lot of different things. I've definitely been involved in startups. Even my first company out of school was a company called Trilogy. And so it was about 200 or 300 people at the time. And so it grew from there.
Awesome. And alumni network, I feel
like. Alumni network.
I've made a lot of friends through your Trilogy alumni network.
Yeah. And so, spent some time in the US, came back to Canada, and definitely really interested in the ecosystem around startups and cities. And so I would say I have a good network in Toronto, but also San Francisco and New York, because that's where I spent most of my time in terms of work.
Atlanta.
Well, definitely there's lots of other cities too, but I have a better network in those three cities. And I would say where I spend my time is kind of two or three different things. One is Shopify. So my last company, Helpful, was acquired by Shopify in 2019. So I spend most of my time doing work at Shopify, and I run a few teams there. One is retail, multi-channel, which is marketing tech, mobile across Shopify, which is a very interesting area for us. And I have opinions in lots of areas. And then also I'm on the board of a company called Optiva, which does telecom billing software, spend some time there. And I also invest a lot. So I'm a prolific angel investor, and then also I'm an advisor at a few companies like Tribal Scale, like Ritual.
You're an investor advisor. You've been a client,
customer as well. Yeah, and then I also do some advising for Y Combinator.
Awesome. All right, I wanted, I've been saying this to every guest who's come on ever since this COVID pandemic started, and I didn't want to make this about COVID, but rather more about sharing our stories and sharing our expertise. A lot of people have uncertain times and have been let go from their jobs. And the way I propositioned you to come on this podcast was, dude, you and I have been fired before. You and I have been laid off. We probably got some stories about when we felt down and out. And let's share our experiences about what we did to come out of it. And hopefully, if we can help people learn from that, that'll be amazing. So tell me about like a time where you've been let go.
Yeah, sure. So I've been, I would say there's been three major like performance like pivots in my career. Mm-hmm. One of them was very early on in my first full-time job, which was Trilogy. In the first 6 weeks on the job, I had like a PIP review, like a performance improvement plan. I was put on a PIP because I wasn't performing at the same level as the rest of the engineering team.
Like when you say that to me and I look at you, I'm like, what?
What? Well, I mean, what's interesting is there are times when you are working on something and you're not performing at the same level as other people and you have to make a change. I think the biggest thing for me was it woke me up to having to change how I was working.
Right.
Trilogy had a
butt. Sometimes you need to wake up. Call. You're not as great as you think you are.
As you think you are, or I mean, in my case, actually, not to like build in excuses into the performance, but it was a brand new environment for me. Right. Mm-hmm. One was I was mainly a Unix developer. Right. If I went from Waterloo, we were working on Unix code. All my co-op terms were like in Linux, and so moving into like working on Windows and working in Java was completely different than working in C on Unix. Right. So I had a completely different development mindset shift. The other thing that happened was the people I was working with were extremely, extremely high caliber, like lots of top performers from, we're all new grads, but lots of top performers from different schools in the US. And I was not used to working at the pace and mm-hmm. at the level that they were. Like we were working 100 hours a week, right? Yeah. This is like 1998. Yeah, yeah. We had set hours at Trilogy University. This was our onboarding. And I was just not used to working like that, working 100 hours and in a new environment. So I had to kind of make a change in how I was working. The other thing that was interesting was Trilogy really did have lots of smart people in different areas. And so their first suggestion was, you should just leave engineering.
Wow.
Right? Right? And to be honest, that was what I did. I left engineering. I went into pre-sales.
Okay.
Focused technical pre-sales. I focused on technical pre-sales, but my vow to myself was I want to get back into engineering. Right. And so I did technical pre-sales, which was obviously more client oriented, focused on the selling motion, but in building demos. So technical. Mm-hmm. Then I moved into technical consulting, which was closer to engineering, right? Writing code all the time versus like these were sales meetings. And then eventually
being a sales guy, and having you in the room, I'm so glad you did that back then.
Yes.
We went into a mojo and slid right into like
some big accounts.
Work together to get some big accounts. Yeah.
And actually, so here's where
you helped me hit my quota and make some money. So I appreciate it.
So you're actually leading to, I think, the punchline, which is I turned the experience into a how do I win even if I lose experience?
Yeah.
Right? Which means what are the things I can learn during this phase of I wasn't writing code all the time, right? I was like, I had to go to sales meetings. I had to travel more. I had to understand client needs. I had to figure out what part of the problem we could solve in the demo such that they would buy our software. Mm-hmm. I had to figure all those things out. And I wasn't thinking about this at the time, right? Because I was 22, 24 years old. But it turned into a, how does this become valuable for me later? Yep. And when I became a consultant, right, for Trilogy, I had to do the same thing. What were the problems we were trying to solve? I wasn't just writing code. I was trying to understand what was not working for the client.
Right.
So again, that consulting mindset ended up being super valuable for me. At the time, I didn't know it again. But then I did end up getting back into engineering at Trilogy, I think, for my last year and a half. So I spent 3 years there. I did a year and a half of non-development, fully full-time development. but was in engineering at the end. But I think you're hitting the punchline, which is, how do you win even if you lose? Mm-hmm. What are the things that you are doing, whether in your current job or if you just got laid off, what are the things that you can do that will still be useful, right? One of the things that people tell me all the time is they're like, oh, I want to get a job at company. Let's say they want to get a job at Tribal Scale.
Yeah.
I'll say, okay, what have you done so far? And they're like, well, I emailed my resume, right? Like, as you and I know, that is 1% of the way towards getting a job at Tribal Scale,
Sure.
Because there's probably tons of things that they could do in order to understand Tribal Scale better, to understand your clients better, to understand the technology stack you're using, to understand the pieces of engineering that you have decided to make as part of your engineering roadmap. Like, all, there are so many things people can be doing to understand Tribal Scale better in a way that lets them feel like they could build something that would help them get better, whether they get the job at Tribal Scale or not. So let's say, you know, they know that you're a pair programming shop.
Yeah.
Right? They could learn all kinds of things about pair programming. They could try remote pair programming tools because we're in COVID-19 world today.
Sure.
They could evaluate the things that work, when pair programming works, when it doesn't. They could read all the studies. All that stuff that they would bring then to an interview with Tribal Scale is still useful outside of Tribal Scale.
Absolutely. There's just new skills you're learning regardless. Yeah.
Exactly. And so I think that's the mindset people want to take from that type of experience. So for me, even though I became an engineer, I wanted to become, stay engineering focused. All the things I learned in talking to clients, problem solving, the consultative approach, five whys reasoning to understand mm-hmm. why they wanted something. Mm-hmm. All that is still useful as an engineer, but may not look like it's useful when you're going through like a PIP like I was.
Right, right. So you're talking a little bit about a PIP and you hit another thing about what people should be doing. I love it because you got tactical on what you should be doing to go into an interview. And what you should be doing is also not, and I also want to say what you shouldn't be doing. It's not, hey, I'm really interested in technology and I'm trying to figure out my next move. Do you have time for a coffee?
Yes.
Those emails get deleted. I know you delete them all the time.
Yep.
And I delete them all the time because you're putting no effort into it. Like, why am I going to take time out of my busy schedule to just have coffee with you because you happen to be interested in technology? That does, like, you're not telling me anything. Right? You haven't done any of the homework to make it a mutually beneficial conversation. So that's something you should not do.
It's a good example because it happens to me all the time, right? Where and I think people feel like if they want to meet somebody, they should just reach out, right? And just say, hey, do you have time? Or, you know, and I found that the vague roaming type of meeting doesn't do well for me, and it doesn't actually make me want to open up my calendar versus somebody saying, hey, by the way, I know you're into agile development. Did you have you read this latest article? It talks about how Extreme Labs did this with this client. And, you know, there's something useful that I can take away from that interaction. And have you thought about this, right? Like, that's a good way to approach these types of things. You know, one example I always give to people is there a product that you use that you would want to work at that company and you could give them feedback on that product?
Absolutely.
Right? I mean,
we do that with clients, right? That's my best prospecting tool. It's like, hey, I love this product and it's not doing it for me. I'm going to call the person in charge over there and have a healthy debate about it.
Yes, exactly. And here's the thing. Even if you don't get the sale or the person applying doesn't get the job, the exercise was useful.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Right? Who knows if that person's going to remember you 3 months from now when they do have an opening, or they might forward your interest to someone else and say, hey, this person seems really sharp. Like, those things actually happen.
Yeah. Have an opinion and actually go put it out there, and those things are useful. And you may learn from you may learn why you're wrong from the other person, right? And that
happens
to me all the time too. It's like, oh wait, I didn't even think of that. You're right, because I'm not living and breathing in your product all the time. You actually make a lot of sense.
Right, and I think that's where you're actually hitting on another important point, which is like taking experience from one domain into another, right? So you might read a paper, then interact with somebody who's doing it in real life and then realize that the paper is woefully out of date because the real life, when the rubber hits the road, it doesn't match. And actually this happened to me. You know, one thing that's interesting about my background as well is I ended up doing a part-time MBA while I was working at Microsoft.
Okay.
And people, you know, would look at it and be like, why would somebody in engineering do an MBA? Right. And it was very similar. I remember taking, and actually I did it in something totally random too. I did it in the financial engineering. And I remember doing, going through a financing class, and we were talking about financial planning, and my prof was talking about something, and I was like, excuse me, sir, like, that's not how we do financial planning. And he was like, what do you mean? I'm like, because I was running the finance area for MSN when I was at Microsoft. Yeah, yeah. And I was like, I'll show you how we, and again, a good example. We learned from that interaction because I learned about a few things that I could take back.
To MSN,
work.
Yeah.
And he was learning about ways that Microsoft, a giant financial, obviously, company that thinks about finance deeply, was thinking about how they approached financial planning as well.
I love it. I love it. So talk a little bit about Trilogy. Trilogy was one thing, but talk about an experience where you've been thrown out on your butt.
So I got laid off from Trilogy.
Okay, so talk about
there you go.
What'd you do? What happened?
Okay, so a few things happened. One was here's a way to approach the conversation, and not everybody can be in the same mode, but this is what happened with my interaction was we announced that we were doing a layoff internal at Trilogy. I had had some inkling that I would be part of the layoff, and so what I did was I reached out to a few leaders and I said, hey, I want to make this easier for everybody. I've already internalized that I'm going to be on this list.
Yeah.
But are there things I can help you with as a trusted, friendly, I'm not going to be destroyed by the layoff.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not totally coming with any of the toxic behavior.
Yes. Yeah. I'm totally open. Do you think that I could help you?
Yeah.
With the layoff in some way, even though I'm a junior, right? I'm 3 years out of school.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
All right. I'm not as senior as everybody else. And I know I'm being laid off anyway. And you know what happened? They said, this is so thoughtful. Let me get back to you. And what they did was they kept me on for a few weeks to finish out a project because the people that were on the project were not able to, they didn't think that they would be in the right mindset. Because again, don't forget, there are people who had families who would be destroyed by this news that they were going to be laid off. Mm-hmm. And they couldn't probably work for like 3 or 4 more weeks. They had to spend their time immediately to go and find another job.
Right.
And I said to myself, I said, you know what? I'm going to take time off. Put me on wherever you need me. And they kept me on for, I think, 2 to 4 weeks. And I helped finish a project. It was, of course, a giant project with 10 people. And I was like one person trying to finish it.
Sure, sure, sure.
But I stayed on. I finished it. I was in a good mental state. And I got to work with some of the leaders there. And that ended up being extremely beneficial because, as you know, I'm on the board of a company that is owned by Trilogy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right? So obviously that ended up being very beneficial to me. Like, 15 years later when they're like, oh yeah, I remember this guy who's like, you know, was really had a good attitude about the whole experience and was helpful to us at the end. Of course there was lots of interactions before in between. Right.
Yeah,
but,
yeah, for sure.
But I didn't burn myself on the way out.
Okay.
Right. And so what's interesting about that is, now I did of course take time off. I kept the network up, but that was exactly the same thing that happened to me when I got laid off the second time, which was at Celestica. So Trilogy's 2001, Celestica, I got laid off in 2005.
And 2001 .com boom and bust.
Bust, yeah, exactly. It was the worst, and just so you know, it was the worst time to find a job because I left Trilogy. I took 5 months off to do nothing. Like, I traveled and I went to Miami and I went to Europe and I just like.
I got a story about 2001 I'll give you.
And there you go.
Miami as well. But
yeah, no. See, very similar. I went to Europe. I traveled around. I learned French. I lived in France for a month and just spoke French. Like, I didn't want to do anything else. When I came back, I came back August 26th and of 2001. And then we all know what happened September 11th of 2001.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the worst time to try and find a job.
Absolutely.
Cause the market's totally tanked. Kind of like now.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I'll tell you, in 2001, I was working at a company in Markham, that represented US companies here in Canada. And I was in the logistics department. I packed boxes and handled the inventory. But I was the guy who was, again, you know, extremely eager to go learn different areas. And I'd really quickly finish my day job and then go, hey, what else can I learn here? And I was that pesky kid who just kept bothering everybody else to see what else could be done. Also playing pranks on them and having fun while doing it. And I thought like I was on top of the world. I was making some decent money and doing well. And saving. I went to Miami and had a blast in Miami, and I came back to find out I have no job, and this credit card bill I got, I don't know how I'm going to pay for it. And the weird part about that situation was I got let go, but because I showed so much initiative and kind of like just what you said, I didn't leave on bad terms. I actually said, I understand the financial hardship you guys are having. Even when I'm gone, if you need stuff in the transitional phase, I'm going to help you out. And for about 6 months, I helped them in a transitional phase, whether it be, hey, Sheena, we can't find this file, or how did you organize this, or, you know, and whatever it may be, I still kept in good contact with the people there. And sure enough, they brought me back. So we were like,
amazing.
We grew from 30 people when I started there in like 98, I believe, to 350, then downsized to about 100. And then they brought me back. And I was like, hey, that's awesome. I'm back. And the company was still struggling and like doing as many companies were. September 11th happened, and you know, and sure enough, I got laid off again in 2002.
You're laid off twice by the same company.
I got laid off twice by the same company. But as you said, just like you with your Trilogy folks, I mean, there's a pretty strong alumni that worked there. I'm still friends with everybody who worked there. A lot of people who worked there, not everybody. But I got nothing but respect for them. That company's still around today. I had to make very tough decisions, and I got nothing but respect for them. I understand it was a business decision that they had to make, and it was a tough decision they had to make. And, you know, I did everything in my power to help them through that tough time. And actually, it was them who encouraged me that I got a knack for sales. And you know what? You should think about a career change. And why don't you go into the copier industry and try to get your MBA in sales and get formalized training selling photocopiers?
Wait, so what were you doing? You weren't doing sales?
No, I was working in the logistics department, getting Palm Pilots sent to me that were defective and then making sure they are and warranting them in a box with like, packaging popcorn and tie it. No, but I worked all over the place. I mean, that was my one job. Like by title, it was logistics. But I ended up working with everybody in every department. There wasn't a department I helped. When finance needed help, I helped with finance. I helped go through all of our shipping bills and everything like that, and helped cutting deals with FedEx. I was doing a whole bunch of other things that were beyond just my title because I knew, hey, I could apply myself here and do much more. And then they helped me along my path to becoming, you know, the business development person that I became. It was encouragement from the people there that got me to be where I am now.
Yeah, it sounds like you were just trying to be as Daniel calls it, a general purpose smart guy or gal, right?
Yeah,
like,
we're
trying to be
the spare. I was the spare tire in the trunk.
There you go. Yeah, exactly. And so it's funny, right? We had our last company was called Helpful because we just thought we wanted to be, you know, the goal is to be helpful. And it sounds like you're doing something very similar. Mm-hmm. This, you know, when I got laid off the second time at Celestica, it was very similar to the first time. They kept me on for 2 months, actually, to finish a project. So I got laid off. I knew when my end date was. So it was actually super helpful to me because I could start interviewing and figuring out what I want to do. But I still worked for 2 months. And the funniest part about that story was I was so helpful in the last 2 months that some VP, I remember exactly who it was, her name was Eileen, she messaged me on the last day and said, can you stay longer and move to India to set up our offshore development team? Because I moved to Singapore for 3 months in 2004 to set up the offshore development team. And at the end, in the middle of 2005, they asked me to do the same thing. And I would have done it, except for I got another job at Microsoft. And I said, I can't. I'm starting on Monday. If I knew the timing, I would have pushed off my start date for like 6 months and said, hey, I'm gonna do this first. But it just shows you that if you know, hopefully, if there are ways you can be helpful to somebody, even though they had, you know, some people might be like, oh my God, they let me go and I no longer care about the company and you burn the bridge, versus instead, I tried to be as helpful as I could, finish the project over the last 2 months. And then they gave me, like, you know, if I didn't have another job lined up, that would have been amazing, right? I would have got 6 months to work out of India. What an experience that would have been, set up an offer.
Yeah. And I think the essence in what you're saying also is that an employer is not happy when they're letting you go, especially when they have somebody who they know is a valuable asset. It's now a numbers game, and you know, they gotta confine to what their budgets are, and they have to make some really tough decisions to do that. So there's no point in being toxic and burning bridges when that happens. How could you leverage the network that you built, that you spent years working at a company, building all this goodwill for? Don't let that go up in flames on the way out. How do you actually leverage that to help you to find your next position?
Yeah, actually, I would say a few things that people don't think about that came to light in these experiences. One was, we had somebody who said, oh, you have to let me go, that sucks. But is there a possibility of me just working part-time?
Yeah.
Right? And that person ended up setting up a work arrangement where they worked one day a week. They cut their pay down by 80%, so they took 20% pay. And that allowed them to also keep their benefits in this case.
Sure.
And they were able to work one day a week to just finish off any loose ends. And they were able to do that, I think, for 6 months or so, which gave them some coverage around benefits, some coverage around some pay. And they were able to then spend the rest of the time looking for something else or even building out their own product portfolio. So that's an example of sometimes they feel like it's black or white. Mm-hmm. It's happened to me. You know, there's a book that I recommend to people. It sounds funny, but it's called 101 Salary Secrets or something. It's like a little tiny book. I used to spend a lot of time at the bookstore and I'd read all the little tiny funny books. And it was a little book like this. And it had all these creative ways to think about compensation. Mm-hmm. Right. And so some of it is hey, could I, in this case, can I work part-time? Microsoft had this thing called job sharing where two people could decide that they wanted to do one job.
Okay.
And it would reduce the compensation. I think instead of 100% each, it would be 60% each or something. And they would just overlap on one day a week and they could just work 3 days a week. Okay. And I was like, what a great idea.
Wow.
You could pick somebody else in the org and be hey, why don't we just share? And you could just share one job and they could just do 60% each and get paid 60%. So Microsoft ends up paying 120%, but it was much more effective because they get way more than 120% value.
Of course, you got two people who are doing it. And right. We all know on your day off, you're still going to.
Exactly. In this case, think 2 days
about work
off.
And 2 days case, off. Right. You're still going to think about work and you're going to start.
Exactly. But there's so many creative things you can do, especially with an employer who might have to lay you off. You could maybe say, hey, maybe I'll just build in more vacation time. Can I roll in professional development? Can I do work from home one day? There's all kinds of things. And I think we just think it's black and white and there's all kinds of in-betweens.
Sure. Right now we got a lot of temporary layoffs and they're being said as temporary layoffs. Nothing
furlough.
Certain. Yep. Furlough, nothing certain what's going to happen in the market.
Yep.
What do you think people should do now that there's so many competing for very few jobs and you're scared? I'll talk a little bit about what I've done for mentally speaking, because I think there's a huge mental health component to it, but what tactical things should they be doing?
Yeah.
When you feel overwhelmed, you look and you say, oh my God, there's so many people looking for, or there's 1,000 people going for this one job.
Yeah. I think there's a few things that I recommend to people to do. I mean, one is, like I said before, I always try to figure out what is the thing that I can do that even if I lose, I still win, right? Yeah. I talked about when I had a performance review at Trilogy and they're like, you're not going to do engineering anymore. I'm like, okay, but how do I do things that will still help me, right? Yeah. I didn't think of it this way. It was a back rationalization that's what I was doing. So if there's 1,000 people applying for one job, again, let's say it's at tribal scale, mm-hmm. I would try to figure out how do I make myself more useful at tribal scale, but also just more useful to myself. Maybe it's learning how you run engineering at tribal scale.
Sure.
Maybe it's how does tribal scale think about the sales process and sales? What are things that I can do to make their organization better? Should I join? Or it just makes myself better, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe they end up pitching clients for tribal scale, even though they don't work at tribal scale, right?
It's kind of scary. Don't do that.
Don't do that. But the idea is that maybe they will find, maybe they can come, this is what any good salesperson does, right? They come with a Rolodex. Hey, I've already come. Here's my presentation on how I think I would pitch tribal scale, not knowing what the internal pitch is. Sure. And I've already talked to 3 clients. And I think that, and you might find out that they're not a fit for whatever reason, but at least you've gone out and done some of the homework.
Absolutely. And I even think I've had that in my experience where someone's come in in that role, it wasn't even for that role. It was actually in product. And she came in and she was just like, here's what I've learned about extreme programming philosophies. And I haven't done it before, but I'm going to present to you on how we're going to do it. And she ended up just saying, okay, we were like, all right, we'll give you a shot. Come in and sit down. And she killed it. She ended up being great.
See, amazing. I think a lot of people forget that there's a bunch of work that you could be doing, right? Here's the corollary. If you are going to apply to 50 jobs, mm-hmm. right? then you probably can't do a lot of work on each of the 50 companies in order to differentiate yourself. But if you really care about 5 to 10 of those companies, there's probably a bunch of work you can do to differentiate yourself, right? If it's, you know, if an example, even at Shopify, we have all sorts of APIs that you can build Shopify apps on top of. We have marketplaces. We have people who want to build Shopify experiences. There's all sorts of things that you could do. You could even, of course, become a merchant. You could start your own Shopify store.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Of course, you're still running a business. And so starts saying, hey, Shopify, why aren't you doing this? As a merchant, I didn't like that. Or I love this, you know?
Right, this is one example. But any company in the world has APIs that you can interact with, right? Whether it's Twitter, the person, right? People could tweet at you and ask your opinion about things, or reply to some of your tweets with their insights on some of the things that you've been thinking about, maybe change your worldview. Mm-hmm. There are APIs, like I just mentioned, Shopify has an API that allows you to actually build on top of. Mm-hmm. There's companies that have products that you give feedback for. You might go into the forums. I used to do this all the time. I was a big, you know, Linux dev kernel, like nerd, right? Because I was writing kernel modules in like 97. I would answer questions in the forums for other people that had nothing to do with what I was working on.
Of course.
Right? So, but there's all kinds of examples on how to make yourself more useful, right? Here's something I was talking to somebody about yesterday, which is write more.
Write more.
If you have an opinion, write more. Go set up a Medium blog and write your opinions about things, right? There's all kinds of time now to spend doing those things, in addition to like going out and looking for that new opportunity.
I'm a big fan of that. I mean, one thing you taught me over the years is, hey, start building your personal brand. It doesn't matter where you're going to work. There's going to be life after the place that you're working at now. Make sure you stand for something, you believe in something. It's okay to change your mind later, but write about it, talk about it, speak about it, and really expand your personal brand. And I think more and more people should start doing that. If you don't have a Twitter account, get a Twitter account. If you're not on LinkedIn, be on LinkedIn, speak on LinkedIn, comment on LinkedIn, Facebook, whichever social media platform is out there. Watch a Gary Vee video and listen to what he says on it. But I think there's a ton that most people should be doing. I had like my own sales blog back in the day, where I just like, people always ask me, why would you go up there like and have the sales blog of just sales tips? And it's not even for your own sales team, you know, you're just going out there and talking about different sales strategies and what you like about them or what you don't like about them. But it made me not have to interview. I feel like I never interviewed because of that blog. I mean, anywhere I went, even if I applied for a job somewhere, I would, like, in my cover letter or with my email to the hiring manager, who I found out who the hiring person is or the VP of sales is, be like, yeah, I'd love to come talk to you. And by the way, you should check out my blog. Do you know how fast my phone is? Hey, why don't you come on in for an interview? And so do things definitely to help your personal brand.
Yeah, I think you're hitting on, again, more important things that are people don't think to, right? They think that the only way to get a job is potentially like, hey, I got to email this person or apply through this. Or what I get a lot of time, especially now, is people message me on LinkedIn. They go, hey, can you introduce me to the hiring manager? I'm like, why? Like, you haven't sent me what is the hook? Yeah. What's the reason that differentiates you? Instead, if they had said, hey, by the way, actually, here's a good example, right? There's a company out there who wanted to do some work for Shopify. Okay. And they messaged me and I was like, okay, cool. Like, but like what, like there's, I get pinged by like multiple people per day.
True.
Right. Why can't I work for Shopify? And so what they did was they took it upon themselves. This wasn't even my idea. They went to the app store. They looked for Shopify app store. They looked for a hole in what they saw in the market and they started building Shopify apps.
Oh, awesome.
And right away, internal people said, hey, do you know these people? I would love for them to work on something internal. I'm like, that's what they wanted to do. Now, what's funny
that's
for
how,
them
that's
is,
how they first approached us.
Yeah. Exactly. But what's funny now is they probably are going to have a better business by building the Shopify apps. Right? but what's funny is, like, again, they went out and they didn't just say, oh, like, just let me just keep emailing Furhan once a week. That wasn't their approach. Their approach was like, cool, now we have a little bit of attention. They also exposed some areas where they thought they could make it better. They sent me an email like, hey, you know, this is how I would make the app store better. I sent it to the app store people. So there's all kinds of ways. There's unlimited ways to do this. Now, one thing we have to be careful of is not everybody has like the time to do these things. However, if you're spending time looking for a job, I would say this is time spent looking for a job.
That's time well spent, right? Like, again, the spray and pray. I was on a podcast on Friday And George, who was on the podcast with me, and that's what he said. He said, well, all his friends graduated from university applying to 5,000 jobs. He applied to like five. And he put effort in those five. And he got the job that he put a lot of effort into. So that is time.
But don't forget, again, even if you don't get the job, but the time you spent on those five, whether you did product insights, whether you're focused on quality, sales, engineering, product, whatever you did that went deep into those five is useful, even if you didn't get any of those five jobs.
Absolutely.
Versus emailing 1,000 resumes, where what did you learn?
Right.
You didn't learn anything. So that's the difference. I think that's the key for me on that story is like, you probably went super deep and learned something about those companies that you can then leverage somewhere else.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great point. You talked about how you learned pre-sales and that became in handy after.
Right.
At Extreme. And I'm sure it still comes in handy now when you go and start figuring out how to get teams bought into doing, following your product roadmap and so on and so forth. And so, yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, even in my past, when I was selling data science, this is back in 2004, 2005, 2006, I thought, God, no one understands what I'm selling. Back then, nobody even knew what data science was. And, you know, I was going in and finding the right use cases to go sell. And boy, didn't I learn a lot in that little period of time that now at Tribal Scale are all skills that I'm using over and over and over again. I wanted to change the topic a little to something that sometimes becomes more taboo, which is mental health. And, you know, getting laid off the second time for me was super tough. I got laid off again. I had an unfortunate death in my family that was of someone who was super close to me. I dropped out of school at the time. And I just felt like the whole world collapsed around me. I was like, I don't know what to do. It was hard to find a self-purpose. I was not myself, the outgoing self, you say, you know, only Shito could put that amazing dinner together. I was the opposite. I was in my pajamas, just growing a beard, kind of like you, but not going. I quarantined myself back then, right? The complete opposite of who I am. And a couple of things that I did to come out of that was, you know, really starting to go and, you know, have a bunch of coffees with people who I respected, starting to be more open about the situation I was having. And really started to look at like a couple of mentors who I could openly speak with and talk freely about. And one of the big ones was my dad, who was a hard ass to mom me my whole life, you know, and very surprisingly, when he saw me in that state, it was my dad who was like, you know, just get up, get out of the house, go be yourself again, go work anywhere. Even if you work at the grocery store, pushing buggies around, you're a smart guy. You're going to start figuring it out, but this rut you're in, you just got to get out of this vicious cycle. Cause it is a downward cycle that you're in and really helped me out. Fast forward in my career, there's still that anxiety sometimes, or, you know, when the world is not going your way, that you feel tough, and talking to someone really helps. And, you know, we've got tools at Tribal Scale that we've now started implementing, like shout out to Inkblot. You know, I've seen our usage, especially during this COVID pandemic of Ink. I don't know who you are using it, but I'm glad you're using it. But I've seen our usage of Inkblot actually go up. And I think it's really important to start figuring out your mental health, because you got to be all the things we're talking about, these tactical things we talk about, you can only do if your mind is set right at first. So I just wanted to share that with you. You're not alone. If you're feeling down and out, but there is light at the end of the tunnel. We promise you're going to figure it out. You're going to start feeling good when you start making yourself busy doing the things that are going to get you to that light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah. And I think it's a really important message, Sheetal, because everybody deals with these in a different way. And I think that the key message is that you're not alone, right? Yeah. Like a lot of times you'll see somebody and be like, I wonder how they do it. And they're always positive, or things keep going well. And underneath, everybody's got their own issues.
Absolutely.
And, you know, actually I'll give you a story that really hit home for me. I was at a tech event and I ran into somebody who was super successful. I don't want to say the name because actually everybody knows who they are. And I said, congratulations. They had just sold like another giant, made some giant deal, which actually was like a $1 billion deal. It was insane.
Nice.
I didn't know this person at all. Yeah. I just said, oh my God, I'm so excited to meet you. Like I was like, and I go, it's so great. Like, what are you going to do next? And he looked at me and he said, I'm so scared. I'm like, what?
What? Yeah.
I was like, taken aback.
You're like, there's a guy who got some stuff together. Like, yeah.
He just made like another $1 billion deal, right? Yeah. And I said, what do you mean? He goes, everybody's watching what I'm going to do next, and I don't know what the fuck I'm going to do. And he was just being open. And what I took away from that was like, no one has it figured out.
Yeah.
It was empowering for me because I was just like, I just said, thank you for sharing that, because I was like, I don't know what I'm going to do. Like, you know, in my, like, you know, I was at a, you know, different point in my life too. And it was just amazing to hear that, because he was, you know, he was so open and was so like, I don't know what I'm going to do. And so, but it was just an amazing thing that like a lot of people are in this zone where they think you look to someone else, and maybe if you get inspiration from that, that's great, but no one has it really figured out. And people really do think these things through in a different way. Like for you, it was like your dad told you. For me, it was right after Trilogy, right? I was like super burnt out. I took 5 months off and did nothing.
Right.
Like I traveled and then I had to finally turn my brain on. I was like, I'm gonna learn French. Like I'm not gonna do programming. But what's funny is, of course, is I learned it like a programming language, right? But I think there's a good example for everybody to kind of figure out their mental state and say, you know what? My one of my tools is time boxing. I'm gonna do this. I'm gonna try to find a job for 4 hours and then I'm gonna do something else.
Yeah, of course, of course. I think that's also important, is that you start, like I started losing track of a schedule. You know, when you just sit there and you're like, oh, I'll do that tomorrow, you procrastinate, then you're up all night, your insomnia is killing you, and you're just, your mind starts racing, I should have done all these things. Then the next day comes and you go, I'll do that tomorrow. And you're just creating even more anxiety and tension in you that you got to release. And you just got to, once you start getting into a schedule, a routine, things start getting a lot better.
But I think the key for you just said, though, is don't try to do this by yourself.
100%.
Figure out who you're...
Well, that goes to a question you just got.
Oh, you did? Okay.
We got a question on Instagram. How do you go about finding those mentors? For me, it's difficult to show vulnerability to people I admire and respect, despite how much we want to learn from them. Thanks for the question, Crystal.
That's a great question. And I'll go back to what's worked for me. Again, everybody's different. What's worked for me is always trying to be helpful to people, right? So if I can be helpful to somebody, maybe that turns into a mutual relationship with somebody, even if they're more senior, farther in their career, right? So a good example is, let's say somebody wanted to be helpful to you, Sheetal, and they wanted you to mentor them because maybe they're earlier in their sales journey. Well, what are all the things that they could help you with, right? They could learn, again, they might put together a tribal scale pitch deck. They might understand your market. They might try to pitch each other clients, but all that would be useful to you. And you might say, hey, I want to hang out with this person because they are helping me and they're earlier in their career. What can I do to give them opportunities that maybe I didn't have, or how can I pull them up with me as Tribal Scale does better? So that's what I would try to focus on, is anything that you do that can be helpful to you and the company, and then potentially work for a mentor, could actually be something that actually helps you get that mentorship. And now don't forget, your mentor might not be somebody in your field. Like for me, going through that tough time after Trilogy was I just hung out with my best friend who's not in technology at all.
Right.
In England. Right. And so that was what I needed.
I do that with Bridge, by the way. Probably can't even turn on a computer.
There you go. Well, for me, it was my buddy Riz. And Riz was living in England at the time. And I just hung out with him. I was like, hey, we're not going to do anything. And I popped in and out, right? I would do my own travels. I would come back to London. But that's what I needed at the time. And so I try, you know, again, don't try to do it alone. For those people out there who are in these states, try to find people that you can confide in. Maybe it's a therapist. Maybe it's some sort of online therapy. Maybe it's in person. Maybe it's Twitter, right?
It's a combination of them.
Yeah. Maybe it's all those things.
It's going to be a combination of them. I think also it's like, there's no silver bullet to a mentor. I think that you can't devalue the people who are actually around you. It's that first step of actually, you'd be surprised when you'd be vulnerable and when you go out there and you show, you know, actually talk to someone and say, hey, I want to be really serious about a topic right now. We're always having fun and games, but I need to, and it's fine. I do this with you all the time where I say, you know, my mind's not in the right place. I need to have a serious conversation with you right now. And you right away, and to most people's credit, they become very empathetic right away. They say, okay, like let's see how we can help, how I can help you get through this.
Well, think about our therapy. What is our therapy Friday night, Saturday night? We jump on House Party and you were playing poker, right?
Like we're doing House Party, we're doing poker. Yeah, we're having fun. It's a relief.
We're having fun, but it sounds funny, but like it is our way to like decompress, be connected to our friends, and Like, we don't talk about anything. We talk about stupid.
I think all most of the time all we talk about is who wants to hit their head against the wall more than the next, because we're all
right.
We're all trapped in the houses.
No, right? and we make fun of each other, right? You make fun of 100. My beard. I make fun of your drinking and you're trying to DJ and your Snapchat filters, right? But that's our way of shooting the shit, right? I know within 5 minutes of getting in there's going to be a height joke.
Of course. Right?
People are making fun of my height. It's totally fine, but that's how we get together. So people have to figure out what that is for them. And it's technology isn't really in a great place now for like you to feel that connection. And we do it through a house party, but you can do it through poker.
I wake up, the only nights I've been, the other thing is substance abuse, I think, is big. So I've, especially being quarantined, have only made myself allowed to drink on Friday nights. I do wake up on Saturdays after house party, after with Farhan and everyone, pretty hungover. I feel like I actually went to a house party. But I think like even that's another good one. Like, be careful of your vices, and too much of anything is not a good thing. So again, build routine in and be very structured in your approach and how to do it.
Yeah, for me, that's chocolate. I've eaten all the chocolate in this house.
Oh, dude, I do that all the time. I mean, I usually don't even have a sweet tooth. It's just I'm here at home, and Michelle's here at home, and she's turned into Martha Stewart, and everything she's making is great. I just keep eating it. Okay, we got 15 minutes left. What else do you think we should be telling people? What else should we be helping them with?
Sure. I mean, I think, you know, one thing for people to think about too is not to be too regimented. Like, we're coming up with ideas. And, you know, we came up with like, hey, spend this amount of time doing this or try this. That doesn't mean that is the right approach or the only approach. Like, sometimes you really do have to like do nothing, right? Like I told you after Trilogy, I didn't spend my time trying to find a job right away. Even after Celestica being laid off, I took three months off just to be like, hey, you know what? It's not about a rat race and getting ahead and putting more money in my bank account or saving for my RRSP or like whatever it is. It was actually just about, I need to do nothing. Mm-hmm. Right. Actually, the joke is, this is when I was eight, Erica and I were dating. We weren't even married for 2 months. She's like, well, at least you got to the gym. I'm like, I didn't even go to the gym for 2 months. I'm not doing anything. I just literally wanted to do nothing. I can't even recall. At least I can tell you what I did after Trilogy, I learned French. I did nothing for 2 months. I was in Toronto. I didn't travel. I didn't go anywhere. I did zero. I can't remember a book that I read. I think I just walked around. It was summer. I think I just went for a walk every day. And shot the shit and did nothing.
Wow.
2005. This is 2005.
What was the last time you've done something similar? Like, what do you do to hit your reset button?
Well, so I do like to read, although I'm finding that I get into I'll read things and I'm always transposing what I read into like other domains. So I tend to like highlight a lot in my Kindle, which is like a way of not being very like.
I thought you would have been more of a real book guy, not a Kindle guy.
Well, you'll hear why. I highlight things in Kindle, and then I use a tool called Readwise, which then feeds me back the highlights. So it helps reinforce the learning. So you can see.
You got a formula for everything. I love it.
I know, that's the problem. So I do have lots of books even in here, but I'm trying to like decompress. So I like watching movies. Mm-hmm. I like hanging out with the kids, and they play Fortnite and they kill me. So I'll do that.
Every time I try to play, I spend an hour well, 15 minutes trying to build something, and the first time I see someone, they shoot me and I'm dead.
Yeah, exactly. You know, that's me. So I hang out with my kids. Like yesterday, I was joking with the people at work that I spent like an hour on my daughter's hair yesterday. Like I was just like drying it and combing it and just like something. Like I was just like, I don't want to do anything. Like yesterday, I took the day off yesterday. So I was just like, I'm going to hang out with the kids. And so I was just like combing my daughter's hair and like drying her hair and hanging out. And I was just like, and listening to her talk. For an hour.
I love it. Right? I love it.
Nothing like there isn't any other ulterior motive for that than just to be there and listen.
That's the best thing when you're locked into your houses right now with the people you love. It's that's going to be a memory she's going to remember forever, right? Like you took an hour to comb her hair and it was great. It was good for you. And it's going to be a great memory for her as well. So taking time right now to actually spend with family and loved ones, because at the end of the day, that's what counts.
Yeah, actually, I'll tell you something that somebody recommended to me that did not work and I do not recommend.
Okay.
So
I like it.
Okay. So I was listening to a podcast with Tim Ferriss and Adam Grant. Okay. Two super influential people that I highly respect. And they came up with.
I thought you fanboyed at Tim Ferriss and Austin with me.
Yes, exactly. I got a picture.
Yeah, you got the picture.
So they suggested, or this is something Adam Grant did, which is he has this thing called a failure resume, where he wrote down every single time in his life that he has failed. And I think he took it further and probably wrote down what he learned from each failure, which is probably the better part of the
exercise. The better part of the exercise, sure.
I wrote down, as you know me, I'm a very optimistic person. Mm-hmm. It takes me a lot to like be beaten down in terms of like personality or attitude to get into a sad mood. I wrote down a failure resume on my phone, and it was the most depressing thing I've ever done. So right. I do not recommend doing that. And what I found from the exercise was like, I'm actually scared now to open the note on my phone, because it's like, it's just got all the things that I failed at. What I found was, over time, I think just generally, you'll just forget the failures and you'll remember the learning experience and move forward. So
hopefully,
but everybody should figure out for themselves what, like, I even felt bad for like days after. I'm like, why am I feeling so down? And I was like, friggin' failure resume.
Dude, I think there was something therapeutic about it. Like,
okay.
I was telling you, I was, I wrote that first blog about the high times I traveled for tribal skill and then the hardship that we went through last year. And, I told you, I wanted to write even more and more and more. And I got this journal that I've written so much more. And you're right. At times it makes me sad, or it makes me angry at myself, or whatever it does. But the more and more I talk about those failures, like especially in forums like this, and I'm very open and I talk about, you know, where we screwed up and well, I want other people to learn from my hardship. I found that to be therapeutic. Like it reminds me and it brings me back to reality going, hey, you know what? Don't make that stupid mistake again. You've already done that.
See, so it worked for you.
Yeah,
but for me, I would never do that again. And I'd probably have to find the note on my phone and delete it, because it was so
good. Get it out of there. I like you optimistic. I like you happy. And you're always bringing a burst of energy into everything.
But it's funny because, again, this is an exercise that different people, the same exercise can affect you differently. So don't feel like if you tried something and it didn't work, that there's something wrong with you. It's just probably the wrong exercise for you. For me, right. Failure resume, not going to do it.
Cool. So you're on a rocket ship called Shopify.
Yep.
This COVID thing, if anything, I feel has brought more attention to what you guys do.
Okay.
So I want, not a sales pitch, but I want you to talk a little bit about Shopify and why it's positioned so different in this market and why you are one of the largest companies in Canada that still needs to hire very aggressively.
Yeah. So I think what's interesting.
Let's end off on that positive note.
Sure. So, I mean, I think like every company in the world, everyone's readjusting to the C-19 world, including Shopify, right? We had to all move remote. We were not a remote company. We're a distributed company. And so there's lots that we are learning just like everyone else. And we all have to manage our own mental health and being home. And I've got like 3 kids through that door and they're at home homeschooling, mm-hmm. right? So there's all kinds of things that we have to do differently. Like one thing that I'll be public about is, you know, I've told people that I'm only taking meetings now from noon to 5 p.m. because I have to manage my home front a lot better. And for the first 3 or 4 weeks, I just worked as normal. And that was an unfair burden on my wife to kind of get the schooling figured out. And it wasn't really figured out even at the TDSB level. Yeah. So now every morning till noon, I'm with the kids trying to get them sorted. She's helping too, because with 3 kids, we have to all work together. But that it gives her some time also to go get ready and do her stuff. She wants to figure out what we're all having for dinner and those kinds of things. So now I'm doing just noon to 5, and that has helped kind of get the home front sorted.
And that helps a lot too, because when you only shift your really important stuff in those.
Exactly. Time boxing, my favorite tool.
I made it on the schedule. I'm happy. Yep.
There you go. Well, I messaged you. I said, hey, do it on the afternoon.
Yeah.
So Shopify, yeah. I mean, we're going to go through an interesting period as well, where, you know, we'll see some things do better because, you know, potentially in times like this, people want to potentially open up more online stores. Mm-hmm. We're going to see some things do more poorly, like retail, right? Because we obviously have a retail business, and those people shuttering their doors is going to change how they think about their operations. Now, one thing that's interesting is if you're in retail,
if you're a retailer, shouldn't you be doing more Shopify activities?
Yeah. So exactly.
Well, we were talking about ETFs earlier, which we won't get into, but
exactly. But one thing that's happening is, retail is going through a transformation, right? So people are saying, okay, if my store is closed to the public, what can I do differently? Right. So should I move more of my merchandise online, right? So you're mm-hmm. going to see some people doing that. Should I turn my location into more of a warehouse so that I can do buy online, pick up in store? Because maybe you need to pick up something today.
Yeah.
So they're making that shift. can I retrain my store staff to be local delivery people just around the my area, maybe a 2 kilometer radius? Can I do contactless curbside pickup?
Yep.
Can I do video shopping? So can I actually talk to my VIPs and clienteling and saying, hey, let me show you what we can actually, what we actually have. Yeah. Can I do, can I enable my store via AR and VR to have people experience my storefront without having to come in?
On Amazon the other day, if you go search for a TV now, certain models, you can actually have the AR experience and see how the TV would look in your house.
There you go. So there's ways in which people can redefine. And I don't think anybody believes, hopefully, that this is not a permanent way, right? Where like we're going to be all staying at home all the time for the foreseeable future. But are there things that I can retool now that allow me to enable my consumers to get what they want and then be stronger as I come out of this once things do open up? So that's how we're working with that type of business. But obviously there's ebbs and flows in all parts. And of course, we are hiring still. We are, you know, we see this as a time that is, of course, fraught with change, but we always want to hire the best and brightest. And that means that we are not slowing down our hiring and we're still continuing to interview. So if anybody's interested, shopify.com/careers is the best way to get started.
Or do your homework and send Farhan a
report. Do your homework. Do your homework. Start an app.
Yeah.
Start a store. Connect with our merchants, become a Shopify expert, answer questions in the forums, answer questions on Twitter, build startup guides. There's so many ways to get people started on Shopify.
Awesome. Awesome. With that note, thanks, Farhan. Thanks so much for doing this. I hope it was helpful for everybody here. And yeah, give my love to your family. Thank you.
Thank you.
We do this First Name Basis podcast. We got another one coming up on Thursday, where we're going to have Anna Folk from Sun Life. We're going to have Dan, who's working in hospitals. We're going to actually talk about what hospitals are doing and how they've had to like do 10 years of digital innovation in the past 3 weeks and how that's actually, and how that will is there now and how that's actually happening. So it's going to be a good one. So catch that one on Thursday at 11:30. Thanks again. This will be published on Spotify, YouTube, iTunes, you name it, LinkedIn, Facebook, you'll find it. So thanks, Farhan. Appreciate it again.
All right. Take it easy, everyone.
Take care. Bye-bye, everyone.